It is Saturday, February 28, 2008, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, geek news, community working environments, piloting helicopters, and your questions and comments about technology. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com. This is Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me, I have a whole bunch of geeks. Al Lucklow, he's a new media architect. Morning, Al.
Good morning, Lyle.
Miles Elam is a student programmer and political junkie.
Good morning.
Ben Jaffe is a freelance media guy.
Good morning.
You need another title that represents the excited quality you have about using your laptop.
How about an excited freelance media guy?
No, that's just no. Sounds horrible.
It sounds weird.
Yeah.
Excited computer user and media.
And fail.
Ah,
we'll think of something later.
We're going to be doing some geek news. And first off, Ben, since I mentioned you, this is the last day of February. It's pretty much the last time for you to get Valentine's for a whole year. How many did you get?
Well, not including family and friends, I got two from Geek Speak listeners. But they were very cool ones. I got one from Judith and I got one from Lori. And actually, the one from Lori came in exactly 15 minutes ago.
He got one from both listeners.
Yeah.
Wow.
Both of
100%
our listeners.
100% of our audience.
And it was a nice little ASCII art heart thing. So anyway, that made me quite happy. Speaking of Valentine's Day, actually, well, rather speaking of sending things like ASCII hearts and flowers. So the Pirate Bay trial has been going on. The Pirate Bay is the popular BitTorrent music site. And so they had an expert witness, professor and media researcher Robert Wallace, and he was an expert witness at the trial. And so the prosecution kind of messed with him, was trying to discredit and slander his reputation because he wasn't saying things that they wanted him to say. And so at the end, when he was asked if he wanted to be reimbursed for travel expenses and everything, he said, well, you could send some flowers to my wife.
And, oh, no.
And so all of several hundreds of the people listening to the Pirate Bay audio stream of the trial sent flowers to his wife. And they've been getting hundreds of flower bouquets. So anyway, I thought that was pretty cool. And this isn't the first time that, something's been mentioned on the internet and... I mean, after the whole shoe-throwing incident of President Bush, plenty of people from Reddit and Dig and other news aggregation websites, social news aggregation websites, sent shoes to the White House and, you know, things like that.
Right,
or what was it, flowers to Nancy Pelosi after she, I can't remember what she had said, but anyway.
It's a common thing.
I think they sent broccoli to the first George Bush, too, when he said, I don't like broccoli.
Yeah.
And the broccoli... That's hard to say, broccoli growers.
Broccoli growers Association sent, right?
Well, there are a lot of people on the internet. And, you know, when you get 1% or a fraction of a percent to do something, it's huge. Huge.
Thank you, Miles. I mean, Ben.
Ouch.
I'm trying to think of names for you, and that one's taken.
Miles? Yeah, Miles is taken.
You could say Geek Ben Jaffe, Miles Elam. That could be my...
I'll give you your nickname.
My title.
Your title. Al, what do you got for us?
Well, I was thinking, I was looking at a few things, and I came up with a new award. I call it the George Jetson Gadget Award for Futuristic Thinking.
Nice.
Moving us ever closer to the jetpack and the flying bubble car. And these are things that I've run across that I think, wow, you know, it's like, we're in the Jetsons. You know, I already feel like I'm kind of living the Jetsons life with webcams and stuff. But I ran across this thing called a rollable display. And, you know, we've seen things kind of, you know, like this, but they actually have prototypes working now, and it looks like it's very close to market. What it is it's a small device that you're able to sort of pull out the screen. It's rolled up, mm-hmm. and it's just kind of pull it out, and then it's an LCD screen, and you can read ebooks, and the devices that they have apparently support HTML, PDF, you know, ASCII readers. You can do email on these things. They've got audio players in them, image viewers, JPEG, PNG, GIF, BMP. They say they're 5-inch displays, 16 okay. grayscales, which is your next question.
And so 5-inch displays meaning 5-inch diagonal, like that's how
right.
you normally talk
about
displays.
Right.
So we're talking like 2.5 to 3 inches tall, or 2.5 inches tall, probably.
That would be
tall.
Math, yeah.
Right, thank you very much. And I'm assuming it's a portrait. Looking at the picture, it's hard to tell because they don't have a fully extended.
They do if you look at the little flash thing on the top. That little thing, it'll show it pulling out. It unrolls, you know. It's like
it's
totally, you know, you always worry about, you know, you have iPhones and stuff, and the screen's only this big. But, you know, they have screens now where they're going to roll out. And I know it's only 16 grayscales right now, but, I mean,
the thing that's interesting, so let's say it's 2 inches tall.
Mm-hmm.
Then that means it's basically in, like, a large pen kind of size.
Yeah.
And then you roll it
yeah.
out.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a scroll.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, it's like we're going
sure.
back to the scroll. We've advanced so much
these?
In technology, and now we're...
And they're selling these, right?
Well, they're actually... they have the prototypes working, and they haven't quite announced the opening. There's a product called the Readius that is supposedly the e-reader that will be... You can look... The thing is, too, that you can look at it in bright daylight, and you can still read the text, which is another issue with screens.
Yeah.
So I thought that
man,
was...
Man, it is small.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really neat... You could do some... And they said you could fold up the screen and stuff. And when I was reading about it, just, you know, you can do all these things.
It's funny because this is definitely the prototype in a lot of ways. Like, it's not big enough. It's not color. But
that's how it starts.
It's quite exciting. And
but
I agree.
Coming.
It's very George Jetson-y.
Like, yeah.
It kind of magically pulls out.
Do you know what the resolution of the screen is?
Yeah. Well, it's got a 400 megahertz processor in it. I don't know exactly what the resolution is.
If you want to see the links and stuff to the show, it's on up on the show page right now. And by viewing that, we'd know right away that Miles is up next. And what's going on with patents?
It's the trial known as
Al, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
As the Bilski decision. This was something that the Supreme Court has not heard yet, but we'll see how that goes. But so far, an appeals court has stated that business methods cannot be patented. In other words, you can patent a better mousetrap, your implementation of a mousetrap, but you can't patent trapping mice, which has been one of the reasons behind software patents.
I'm sorry, patents. You're messing with my brain about that. That's an analogy. The idea
right.
that we're going to trap mice, that would be a business model. You can't patent.
Right.
Okay.
Lyle's
so
had
the
some
actual,
issues with mice.
I've had
lately.
Mice all week in my office, so it's really funny that you bring up mice.
Yeah.
I'm a little skittish about them. Anyway.
Mouseware.
So is this – okay, so go on. So you can't do the business practice anymore?
Right, which is – this is actually going back to where patents were prior to the early 1980s, which is that beforehand you had court decisions saying you cannot have a patent on, for example, a mathematical equation.
Okay.
And some patents started coming through that were saying, well, as long as there is some hardware aspect to it, you can patent it. So a lot of software patents have come through saying it's a software patent in conjunction with a standard PC,
mm-hmm.
which basically is not a constraint at all to say that. So
right.
software patents have been exploding since then and have...
But have been a lot about process rather than about actual...
Exactly.
Kind of,
like, for example, Amazon's one-click patent.
Right. The idea that no one else can have a one-click purchase
right.
online.
Ridiculous. Not necessarily how Amazon implemented it, but
right.
the one-click in and of itself.
So,
and that has been struck down.
It's been struck down, which means a lot of... I mean, that's amazing for software development or for websites.
Right.
The
a lot
deal.
Of patent portfolios are suddenly grossly devalued.
Have we seen companies fall because of this?
I have not seen the information regarding
that. Do you think that this ruling is kind of going to be accepted as the default, or do you think it's going to be kind of fought a bit?
I'm sure people are going to fight. I'm sure because there's a lot of money at stake on both sides of the argument. So, of course, there's going to be things coming up. And the Supreme Court has not yet heard it, has not yet agreed to hear the case now that the appeals court has ruled on it. So that may be overturning. It may go back to status quo. But as it stands right now, it looks like it has a good chance of sticking around.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that, Mr. Elon. We're going to go on to Ben. What's going on with the browsers in the world?
Safari 4 was just released. And this is really interesting to me because they call it a beta. They called it a beta. They said on their website, you know, Safari 4 beta has been released. And so I'm thinking, oh, beta, yeah, that's awesome. I'm going to install it. And I can still use Safari 3 if I want in case it's not up to speed. Because, you know, the idea behind a beta is you don't necessarily have all the bugs worked out or all the kinks worked out. You're releasing it so you have a whole bunch more people testing it all for free instead of having to pay for people testing your product in-house. And so they released this, and I installed it, and it overwrote my Safari 3 installation. So just a word to everyone out there. They call it a beta, but to me, it's not really a beta. I mean, it looks like it's pretty much ready for prime time. The only thing that makes it look like a beta to me is that they have a little bug up there installed, button installed, a bug report button that actually the icon is a little ant, which is kind of funny to me. But
that's interesting. You said before the show that you think they're calling it a beta because that's what people do.
Yeah,
now.
I think it's stylish now to call things beta.
I think you're right. And like when you said it's not a beta, I was like, well, what do you mean? You know, they're calling it a beta. Of course, it's a beta. They're naming it. But the idea that it's not a beta because it replaced your Safari 3.
Yeah,
it's not a beta. It's beta only you try. You don't change over to
exactly.
It. And Safari 3 is a final version. I mean, that's something that is
Safari,
reliable final version. So the idea of a beta replacing a final version, that's very different.
Yeah, and granted, it does come with an uninstaller, I should say. But it's, I mean,
but does
the
uninstaller put Safari 3 back?
That's weird.
I don't know, but because you can install WebKit. You can have WebKit on your dock next to Safari, and they're two separate applications. You can run them separately. They're different processes. You can open different, you know, it's they're completely separate from each other. So why remove Safari 3?
Actually, they're not completely separate.
If one crashes, WebKit, the other doesn't.
If you put WebKit on there and you run it, it's using the Safari shell. That all the things that you see in terms of menu items or the framing to say it back and forward, that is Safari, even though you're running what's supposed to be considered WebKit.
Now, Miles, what is, even though it shows up in different application space, what is WebKit?
WebKit is the rendering engine that is used by Safari. So the part that you see, that's the web page, that's WebKit. The JavaScript that runs, that's WebKit. But the outside Chrome is the best way I can describe it. The back button, the forward button, things like that. That is
the
Safari.
Skin, if you will.
Right. So Safari is actually a holder for this rendering engine.
That makes a little bit of sense. I guess I should have seen it coming because when I installed Safari 4 and it said you have to restart your computer now, I just moved the window off to the side like you're not supposed to do. And I noticed Safari 3 behaving a little bit strangely. When I'd open up a new window, there'd be a couple little inconsistencies in the graphical interface and things like that. So,
Miles, I'm sorry, just to jump back to Miles' WebKit thing.
Sure.
Why would they release Safari 4 without having the most recent stable WebKit stuff inside Safari 4? I mean, is Safari 4...
On the contrary, it is the most stable WebKit.
Do they have, like, font downloading embedded and all that in Safari 4? Does it have all these amazing features we've been waiting for?
I've actually been using the WebKit nightly.
So much, you don't know.
I've been using the bleeding edge. So I'm actually using newer code than what's in the typical
Safari
4 beta.
Some of the stuff that's in the WebKit that's pretty amazing is the ability to do tons of stuff inside CSS. Animation dropdowns, shadows, blurs. You can do downloadable fonts. Well, I can, as a web developer, put up a font embedded in the HTML, and your browser will actually download it and use my font, which completely changes the way websites will be.
Right. So instead of having to make an image of that,
I can use any font I want, kind of, as long as I own it. There's a whole. Yeah, but in any case, so we don't know how many of those are in Safari 4, because that's what's really exciting to me about Safari 4, the possibility of these great new features being in it.
Well, I do know it does have animations, it does have transforms, but I don't know to what extent. Like the dropping leaves in a demo that I showed Lyle earlier, I don't know if that's in the newest beta,
extensive.
But it probably will be.
We're talking about full animation kind of effects, not done in JavaScript, but actually done in stylizing, which is really kind of amazing in the CSS. We should move on, though.
Okay.
But Ben, anything else you want to mention about Safari 4?
Nothing important.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, okay. A couple weird interface changes, actually. Something that completely threw me for a loop is now so Safari 3, there used to be a tab bar underneath the bookmarks.
Yeah.
And you'd open a new tab, it would pop up there. And now the title bar, where you would click to drag the window, is now the tab bar. And so you can click and drag the tab bar, which is... the menu bar.
Are you talking about inside the actual menu part where the red, yellow, and green is on
the
Mac?
Yeah, the tabs are up there.
I'd like to see that.
It's the first time I've seen that on a Mac. Yeah. I think Google Chrome has a similar thing, but of course
that's... It makes a lot of sense. They basically copy Google Chrome.
Okay.
The idea is that you're moving the tabs into a mostly unused area so that most of the area that's usable.
What about the title of the web page? Where does that go?
That goes up in the tab bar, which is up at the top now. But
I see. And then the title of the page is the tab. Is this for Safari 4 also released for Windows?
Yes, they
at the same time.
Yes, something really cool about it is that it now looks more like a Windows application, whereas before it kind of looked like an OS X application on Windows. It was really weird. Yeah. And so,
all right,
I don't know.
You can go ahead and try the Safari 4. It's a beta, even though it will replace Safari 3. Which
keep that in mind. So,
thank you very much, Ben, for that update.
Certainly.
Al, let's talk about what we're using right now.
Yeah, there's a neat little application, or I guess it's a web app. It's called Etherpad. You can find it at etherpad.com, and it's really kind of a cool thing where people collaborate on a document.
Yeah, we're using it right now.
Yeah, it seems like the ultimate expression of where we're going as a society on the web. Everybody's looking at the same thing, commenting and changing it all the time. It's like if you can imagine a page of typed words, and everybody who's invited to the thing can go in and make edits simultaneously, and each person has a color assigned to them, so you can see who's changing things, and you can just all do it simultaneously. I mean, it's really kind of cool. We're doing it as we have the show right here, and Lyle is changing the order of what things we're going to talk about, and he's moving it, and then we're arguing and moving it back, and we're going back and forth.
And Miles still hasn't filled out what he's doing next for news, which is what I'm waiting for. But somebody, and I don't even know who it is because I've lost track of colors, we're going to go ahead and try it out for the listeners. Please go ahead and – oh, Jeremy, you're doing it. Go to etherpad.com/geekspeak, and everybody can try it out. If you're listening, you can try it out. We're not actually going to be try that out.
I will
be. You're going to try that out? Okay, great.
Yeah. I'll be chatting with you guys if you log on.
It's really
Etherpad,
cool.
Etherpad is not A-E-T-H. It's E-T-H-E-R.
Ah, Etherpad.
Yes.
All right.
And the subluminous ether that everything is suspended in.
And I'm actually going to put that link up on the GeekSpeak site right now.
Perfect.
The demo has people using Skype at the same time they're using Etherpad. So you can all be talking and changing a document around, and then the document is saved. At the very end, you can hit save, and it sort of freezes the document. But, I mean, this is kind of where, you know, all of us being on the web, people commenting, people looking at the same thing, talking, this is actually changing the entire message. It's sort of collective intelligence. It's the baby steps. But the cool thing is this is all free. And there's no membership. You don't have to join. It's a little weird because they can't be making any money doing this, but it's such an awesome little utility.
Well, they're not making money yet, but they probably will.
Maybe you can buy the whole thing and put it on your own company server, and then you could have meetings and people. I mean, then it would make sense, and you know, selling it as a, but making it available like this, it's just a really neat thing. I'd encourage people to, you know, if you do things like this, if you're trying to come up with a party idea and you want to get together with your friends, you just kind of go into this one place, and then you can all just contribute ideas as you go simultaneously, and then end up with, it'd be kind of neat to see the kind of things people are doing. There's also a little chat window too, where you can chat at the same time.
Yeah, I'm getting lost in trying to do all the things that I'm doing all at once right now, but it is very much the future of collaborative work.
Yeah.
And speaking of collaborative work, I feel like we should talk a little bit about collaborative work, but let's do one more news story before we talk about collaborative work environments. Miles, go ahead, sir.
The president of the Authors Guild has put up an editorial on newyorktimes.com regarding text-to-speech. The Amazon Kindle 2, the second revision of their e-reader, was released, and one of the features of it is the fact that it can read the book to you. This being a great boon for people who want to be able to read a book while they're driving, you know, have it just play on the stereo, or people who are blind to be able to read that book. The president of the Authors Guild has an issue with this because it's saying that this is he is categorizing it as a public performance, to say that it is akin to someone reading a book and selling a book on tape, that it's two different mediums.
Mm-hmm.
And wants the Kindle 2 to pay the extra money for the reader. So there's the question.
That's a pretty valid thing. In copyright, normally there is multiple versions. You know, you you deal with, like for a magazine, it's very common in the magazine right. world. You say to the publisher, you can print this story once. And then if they're later going to do a book of their best stories, they've got to pay you another fee.
Right. There's that's the argument there is that if you buy a book, that doesn't mean you automatically have the right to take the text-to-speech and you, or the book on tape.
Yeah.
And if you record a book on tape, you should be paying royalties back to the person who made it.
Right.
However, if this is assuming that it's not a public performance, assuming you're not hooking it up to a group of people, if you're just reading it for yourself, is the device which has a PDF or a modified version of it, that ebook, and doing a text-to-speech, is that akin to a book on tape? Is that actually a separate medium, or is it part of the same technology that you downloaded? And
in that you have to read it, and
I mean, right, is reading making a copy?
Oh, you mean for the audiobook?
Because it's not recorded. It's not pre-recorded. Ah. It's simply taking the text and reading it aloud, except that it's a computer reading it aloud as opposed to a person.
Hmm.
I, of course, am not a lawyer, but my thought is if you're not making a copy, if you're just taking that text that's on the book and reading it aloud as a computer synthesizer, then how is that different from a grandfather reading books to their
grandchild? What about performance rights? Because...
But is it a performance? No, if someone makes a performance,
who's doing the reading for you?
The Kindle is. Hmm. The Kindle is reading the text that's on the ebook and making it as text to speech.
That is very interesting.
So is it actually different from you reading the story to someone else?
Right.
Someone, you know.
Because if I were to sell a book to you and you were then to read it to my kids, that wouldn't be another copy of that book.
Right. If I recorded that
right.
and then tried to sell it, that's absolutely in copyright domain.
That's creepy.
But wow. If it's a computer reading the book to you aloud but not making a copy, how is that legally different from a human reading the book?
I would have to say that Amazon, I mean, they have to, the only issue with this is that the separation of concerns, right? The book, the reader, the Kindle is how you buy the book. Like, in some ways, it's connected with that. So, to some degree, its feature set partially is involved with the copyright. If it was two different systems, right? You bought it and then you used it, and they're very disconnected. I could see the argument that it would be different things. But if you're selling a feature that does that, it's a little hard to say.
And if you only read it through the synthesizer listening to it and you never read it in the other form?
Right. And the other question is, of course, is if I have a Kindle and they make a plugin that allows you to kind of do a flash interface or some kind of like really pretty thing where paragraphs come up and fade in with blue and then they fade out. And then in the background of that, a photo shows up with kind of a keyword match of the book. Is that a different form? Even though really it's just an algorithm that says, show the next paragraph and make it pretty. That's another version of the book.
And there is something, what I wonder also is if you buy a book, if you buy a newest bestseller, mm-hmm. whatever, and you in your own home start writing down exactly what's in that book, taking out passages, but you never give it to anyone else, does that violate copyright?
Intriguing.
I just think that when on this Kindle, you know, maybe if I had it and I let it play and I let my kids, you know, read them a story, I might want to charge them a quarter or something to cover the copyright fees.
I think that's a good idea.
I'm sure I'll read you a bedtime story, but it'll be, you know, 10 cents, you know, yeah. Alexander, Jessica.
I mean, this is what copyright is, a right to make copies.
Yeah.
Is this a copy? That's where the fundamental question comes about.
What do you think, Miles?
I don't believe that it's a copy. Right. You're not making a copy. You're giving it in a different form. I don't see it as being fundamentally different from someone reading a book to someone else.
Jeremy Neuner is the co-founder and CEO of NextSpace Coworking and Innovation, Inc., a co-working space and catalyst for new business located in downtown Santa Cruz. A few weeks ago, we talked a bit about NextSpace and some of the companies that have come through. Jeremy also has a 15-year career as a helicopter pilot in the U.S. Navy and as a managing consultant and as an economic development professional, as a successful entrepreneur, creating, motivating, and leading teams to accomplish amazing, challenging, and sometimes wacky things. Jeremy holds a bachelor's degree in literature from Georgetown University and a master's degree in business and government policy from Harvard. But he's learned the most by playing Legos with his kids. How old are your kids, Jeremy?
They're 3 and 5.
All right. Good. Well, welcome to the Geeks, Jeremy.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
I sort of feel like I'm out of my geek league here. I feel like I'm sort of a geek fraud.
I appreciate
you guys letting me into the club.
On the contrary, now if someone calls in with a Windows problem, we'll be able to answer it.
That's true. And none of us fly helicopters, and all of us want to. So,
all right, cool.
So you're one up.
All right, cool.
All right, so next space, we've talked a bit about some of the companies that are there. The idea is if you're an entrepreneur and stuff, you don't want to have the whole expense of renting a space and the legal responsibility and all these things that come with having physical brick and mortar place. So you've produced the space in Santa Cruz that allows people to rent small amounts of space and grow into bigger space as they need to. And I was there yesterday in your fourth Friday kind of open co-work collaborative day, which you do at the end of every month on Fridays. It was a really fun experience. It's kind of like a coffee shop with a little more structure about business and more space.
Yeah, the first thing I want to do, and thanks for coming to Fourth Friday, by the way. We do that the fourth Friday of every month, where we just sort of throw the doors open and let people come in and try it out. But the first thing I want to do is politely correct you. We don't actually rent or lease anything. We actually sell membership. And I think that's a really important distinction, because we sell membership first and foremost into a community of people, into a community of innovators, entrepreneurs, freelancers, small business people, who first and foremost are craving that community and want that community to sort of work within and work next to, and use that community as a place to sort of conceive of and grow new ideas. One of my members told me yesterday, said what you're really paying for at Next Space is you're paying for the energy, and you're paying for the buzz, and you're paying for that collaborative work experience. And we do that whether you're going to be are one of our office members, which, as the name suggests, gets you an office, or one of our cafe members, as the name suggests, you just mentioned, sort of like this cafe-like experience. It is membership, and that's a really important distinction.
Which also means that there's no lease agreement kind of stuff. You don't have the responsibility of being in control of the space.
Absolutely.
You just have access to it.
And that's actually one of our huge value adds, I think, is that if you want your own space to run your business from, maybe you'll find 200 or 300 square feet, 500 square feet. First of all, good luck finding that in Santa Cruz. It's a really hard thing to find.
Yeah.
And then you're on a lease, which...
And you're by yourself.
And you're by yourself. So for us, it's... particularly in a, let's call it an uncertain economy right now, being able to take on a 3 or a 5 or a 7 year lease is a ton of risk. Where at Next Space, you can join up for a day pass or a month at a time.
Try it out. How long has it been open?
We have been open since October 1st, which is not quite 5 months.
Yeah.
And we have 95 active members.
Wow.
So that's about one member every business day since we've been open.
And I'm assuming that you are impressed by your success?
We are pleasantly surprised at how far we've come in such a short amount of time.
Okay.
And we're definitely ahead of our numbers so
yeah.
far.
So this space is in a prime location in Santa Cruz for a business. It must have cost you pretty punny to set up the environment and to get a lease for the building and everything. Is the people that own the building partnerships, or how do you start that process?
Well, I'll say that in our mission statement in Next Space is to bring together local talent, local ideas, and local capital. And that's exactly what we did. We're sort of the first example of that. Or not the first, but
example.
I guess one of the most recent examples of a local idea that me and my co-founders had, the talent to bring it together. And then we are a little angel-backed startup ourselves.
Uh-huh.
So we found some local investors who helped us raise some money and went out and launched the business. So
okay,
it's a great little success story.
I'm assuming that the cafe experience is not as crowded as it was yesterday regularly, because, of course, you had it open to the public yesterday.
Right, right.
How are you in a place where you need to expand soon? What's the growth look? A lot of your offices look like they're full.
Yeah, we have 24 offices and we have 24 office memberships.
Yeah.
So we're totally full on office memberships. We're probably about a third full on our cafe memberships, and
Can you describe an office
sure.
for everybody, and also what the cafe? We're saying cafe. What exactly are you?
So our offices are just like the name suggests. They're offices. They range anywhere from sort of 125 square feet sort of interior office to the nicest corner office in Santa Cruz, which is right on the corner of Cooper and Pacific. A guy named Galen O'Hanlon, who runs GoHanlon.com, which is a...
Oh, I didn't know Galen was in there.
Yeah, Galen's in the corner office. It's pretty sweet. Come by and check it out sometime. And the cafe... We actually removed a couple of offices that were in the space when we sort of inherited it, and took out a couple of those offices to kind of create this more collaborative experience. It does look a lot like a cafe. It's got cafe tables and comfy couches and chairs and stuff like that. And that sort of forms the core of the Next Space physical space, but also sort of the Next Space experience.
Is there coffee?
We actually brew all the free Lulu's coffee that you can drink.
Wow. Yeah,
so
that's nice.
I can't get you a triple no foam latte goodness whatever, but
if you just want a cup of coffee.
If you just want a cup of coffee.
Someone if you actually enough coffee every day, your base membership would pretty much cover that.
Yeah, I
mean,
that'd
be equivalent to drinking.
Yeah, a $10 day pass. I'm sure you can probably drink more than $10
worth of coffee. So that's what it is, $10 to go in to be in the cafe? Or?
Yeah, we actually that isn't really our bread and butter. But if you do want to come out mm-hmm. and just hang out for a day, it is $10. And then membership starts.
One of the things that public radio does, we can't be commercial.
Oh, sorry.
So mentioning prices is one of those things that seems pretty commercial. But
sorry.
It's around those fees. It's cheaper.
Yeah,
you can learn all about
it's very
it
cheap.
Guys.
It's a lot cheaper than leasing an office.
And
how about
KMSP
that?
is no way saying you should go do this. But I went there yesterday and I enjoyed it personally.
I'm sorry to get you in trouble.
It's not in trouble. Any case. So some of the success stories we talked before with Sean when he's on the show.
Right.
The one I want to talk about really is 12 Seconds.
Okay.
It's kind of become this, a lot of people are talking about it. It's,
sure.
It's Twitter is like 12 Seconds but without video. So
right.
That's what 12 Seconds is. And they were formed, the reason I want to mention it is that they were formed because of Next Space in some ways. The people that did it just joined up and found each other, and that's how the collaboration, that's from my understanding.
Right. Actually, one of the, that's not quite right. The 12 Seconds did emerge before Next Space was around. They emerged out of the Santa Cruz Geeks, which I want to make sure that everybody knows that that's what Next Space emerged out of as well. A ton of credit for Next Space success does go back to Sean Terrio, who you guys had on the show a few weeks ago, Mark Rosas, Shane Perlman, and some of the folks who founded the Santa Cruz Geeks and actually created the community
right.
From which Next Space emerged. And 12 Seconds emerged from that as well. Now, we have had 12 Seconds in Next Space since we opened, and they've had have been sort of a benefit, I think, of the Next Space experience. You know, Saul and Jacob, who are running, and Beach, who are running 12 Seconds, have been working their butts off. But I like to think that a wee bit of their success we can attribute to the mm-hmm. nice folks at Next Space.
Yeah. All right. If you'd like to call in with questions and comments about geek speak stuff, technical stuff, you're welcome to do so. We'll take any questions you'd like. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, 476-2800. Or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. And you fly helicopters. How do you fly a helicopter?
I did fly helicopters. You get in and you strap in and you turn it on and you go.
That's what we all think, but
right.
I hear it's like the hardest thing to fly. Why is that? How many different controls are there?
Somebody once equipped that a helicopter is really just 10,000 individual pieces all flying in formation together. and it's true because it is a lot of counterbalancing forces, and I guess really ought not be able to fly, but yet it does. So,
do you use both your feet at the same time?
Yeah, both hands and both feet.
So when I'm driving my car, if I have to use both feet at the same time, besides stopping, I mean, it seems like how do you stabilize? If you really have to be strapped in tight to your seat?
First of all, I guess before I make myself sound too cool, I mean, there is a lot of computer controlled stability systems built in, but. In theory, it's pretty simple. Just think of the rotor as a giant propeller, which it pretty much is.
That's the top one.
That's the top one. And it spins around really fast and creates lift. And think of it as one big vector. And the collective, which is in your left hand, controls the pitch on the rotor blades collectively and sort of controls the size of that vector.
So the blades themselves
are wings.
Can turn.
Absolutely.
It actually can tilt the blades forward in the vehicle and backwards and
side
to side as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And when you say the thing in your right hand, the main joystick, if you will, there's one thing for your hands, right? Or is it
right.
two things for your hands?
Yeah, there's two things for your hands.
Okay. In your right hand, what does it do? Is it increases the speed?
No, that's called the cyclic, because as the name suggests, it controls the pitch on the rotor blades cyclically and actually tilts the rotor disc, whereas the collective
in your left hand.
And your left hand controls the pitch and the blades collectively and increases the total lift that the rotor system is generating.
Okay, so the amount of lift, so the speed of the blades is constant.
It's constant.
Okay. So the amount of tilt, if you will, of the blade itself, which will cause more of a lift or less of a lift,
right.
is your left hand.
Yep.
And so that's just an up and down motion?
Yep.
Just kind of like,
just goes
like
up
a throttle.
It's just it's
even though it's not
throttle.
Really a throttle.
Right.
And then the right one actually tilts the thing around.
And makes you go left and right and forward and backward.
And I'm assuming the feet just cause the back thing to spin. What's that?
That's right. Your feet control the pitch on the tail rotor, which is designed to just counteract if you got something, you know, basic Newtonian kind of physics. Hey, that sounds pretty geeky. If something's spinning really fast one way, that there's going to be a counteracting motion the other way. And the tail rotor simply counteracts the spin of the main rotors, and your feet control the pitch on the tail rotor to kind of control
the
yaw.
If the tail rotor was doing nothing, you'd be spinning
Spinning as fast, 358 RPMs or whatever.
That's not fun. Half of that, right?
Yeah, in the other direction from which the rotor blades are spinning.
Okay.
So. Which would also take away from some of the lift.
Right.
Great deal.
And make you dizzy, lift. Too.
Have you spun a vehicle like that?
No. I have spun around a little bit, but not quite that fast. Spinning around in a helicopter is a really bad thing.
Yeah, I can imagine. Because then all those components just fly apart, right?
Right.
They don't fly in formation as well.
Yeah,
Al,
right.
You mentioned something earlier.
The cool thing that I heard about helicopters is that you think about them and you think, well, if I'm in a plane and the engines die, maybe I can glide down and land in the water. Or, you know, I can glide or something.
Yeah, planes can glide.
Yeah, and then a helicopter, though, I was watching some show, and they showed that, well, helicopters actually have a safety feature too, as well as if you know, you just run out of gas or the engine stops or whatever. Jeremy, maybe you could explain that, because I think that is probably the most fascinating thing everybody's going to really hear about for weeks after they hear this.
Sure, yeah. It's actually a pretty standard maneuver. It's called an auto rotation, and basically you just flatten the pitch on the blades completely by lowering that collective all the way down. And make no mistake, you are crashing during this particular maneuver. But if you've
got enough height, right?
Yeah, you have to have enough height to be able to do it and enough speed.
So you take the collective and you rotate it down so it has almost no lift.
That's right. And what happens is as you descend, the air starts moving up through the rotor blades and keeps them spinning. And it's sort of a power management game. You're sort of storing energy. So at the very bottom, when you are at that crucial moment of what's basically a controlled crash, you are able to sort of use the energy in the rotor blades.
Okay, so the falling
to sort of cushion your landing.
So you set the blades up so that they will spin well.
So you
like
kind of
a,
you
like
kind of
daisy wheel thing.
The front end kind of points towards the ground, right? And you kind of like you're in the sky, and then you kind of point down towards the ground like you're going to crash. And then as you get closer to the ground, the propellers are spinning really fast, and then you just kind of swoop up and then just boom, land.
And, yeah, use the stored up energy in the rotor system.
And that swoop up is just taking the collective and going full lift on the collective at the last minute.
At the last minute, you just you pull like your life depends on
and
it, because it actually does.
You do it?
The helicopter that I trained on in flight school, you could auto-rotate all the way down to the deck, and
we practiced
that all the time.
So you actually did it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, you think of this as like, my God, this would be the worst thing, but they made you do this.
Like hundreds of times, yeah.
Wow.
It's actually pretty cool.
What the stabilizing one at the back, again, what's that called?
It's called the tail rotor.
The tail rotor.
Because it's a rotor that's on the tail.
Can it still work when it's...
Very complicated. Complex. Don't try to figure it out.
Thing, sorry,
yeah,
guys,
I know,
great.
Gosh. See, I have a mic control. I can actually take you out if I want.
Sorry.
So
they don't call it the body rotor. So
the tail rotor, if the engine's cut, doesn't that die out too, and don't you start spinning?
No, because it's a single transmission that's it's controlling the tail rotor as well. So the same mechanical energy that's keeping the rotor blade spinning is also keeping the tail rotor spinning.
So as you start to fall and it speeds up, then you've got tail rotor control.
You got it, yeah.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there's a fly helicopter. That's
And all this is very pertinent to running Next Space, by the way.
Well, the thing is we're geek speak, and we like to geek out and stuff. Yeah. So I had to ask when I saw that. Let's go ahead and take a call. What the heck, right? That's what we do here sometimes.
Sure.
Carl.
Hello.
From Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, this is Carl. I'm calling about collaborative software. Mm-hmm. I'm interested in if you have a bunch of companies all in that same area and they want to share calendars and documents and so forth, if you have recommendations or if you're using some techniques to share those resources.
The only actual collaborative piece of software that we have is a regular old Google Calendar app, so people know, you know, what's going on around Next Space and when the conference rooms are being booked. But actually, what's cool is that a lot of the collaboration actually happens in, you know, real human being interaction.
The analog method,
right? The analog, right? The web 0.1 method. And that actually is a big part of, I guess, the magic in Next Space too, is that people really do have these sort of water cooler conversations around an actual water cooler, and bringing bringing sort of virtual community together with actual physical community, I think, is a big part of the next space magic.
Yesterday I was getting coffee. I was waiting for the coffee to percolate, so I got a nice fresh cup. And the person next to me, I was like, so what do you do? And he started talking about telephony, and I was like, oh, man, you got to be on GeekSpeak. And so I got his card, and that's a future show right there. And that wouldn't have happened unless I was in that space. And
of course, he knew you were going to ask him that, probably.
Probably, because he listens to my phone all the time.
Well, he's telepathic.
Right? Oh, no, telephony.
Telephony. Oh, yes. I see. He uses the telephone. I'm into telephony, too.
It's actually really, well, it's a really interesting call. We'll talk about that in the future. And Carl, I don't know if you heard the part about Etherpad that we were talking about. And if you go to geekspeak.org in today's show, you can see a link on how that works. That's a pretty good collaborative tool. The other thing is, though NextSpace doesn't furnish these collaborative things, because really it's just a gathering space, the people there are using it. One thing that's used a lot in, and I would think of it as kind of collaborative, is Twitter. So I actually know a lot about what's going on in NextSpace, even though I'm not there, because I follow first the NextSpace Twitter feed, and then a few of the key people that are there, I follow their feed. So knowing about Fourth Friday, for example, was because of Twitter, which is kind of a collaborative connection type of tool. Didn't we have a news story about collaborative stuff? Or virtual working stuff out? Is that yours?
I looked up collaborative work environment on Wikipedia. Does that count?
That does. That's amazing.
But that was, you know, actually kind of interesting. But more, that was really talking about virtual workspaces, how people are using, you know, phones and IMs and video cameras and all that kind of stuff to create a virtual collaborative work environment that's you know, it's regardless of geographical location. And I think NextSpace, the thing that's kind of cool about that is everybody is in one place, and there is a there's a variety of types of ways you can be in there. You don't have to be in the most pricey corner office. You could just be in there for the day, or there's like little, what do you call the little cubby? They had like little cubby holes you could be in. They're not cubicles. They're
We call that our Carol membership.
Carol.
Because it's sort of like a study Carol in a library. Mm-hmm. And it's a way for you to have a little slice of NextSpace real estate to call your own, where you're not ready for an office because that's a little pricier, and maybe you don't want to have the fluidity of the cafe membership where everything you have to pack in, you pack out, and you sort of first come, first serve in terms of which table or comfy chair you get to sit at. So the Carol gives you a little sense of permanence.
And you get like a one Ethernet cable?
You can be plugged into the Ethernet. You can use, we actually have
How does the Wi-Fi work? I mean, what exactly do you get when you come in there? Do you have what services? Do you just, because you're a member, you have coffee. We know that.
Coffee, and that's probably the most important thing. We try to make it as turnkey as possible, so you don't pay anything for your utilities. We cover all that. You don't pay anything for your wired and wireless internet access. You don't pay your downtown business fees, like your parking deficiency fees and your business improvement district fees that all the downtown businesses have to pay into. We cover all of that. You can use NextSpace as your mailing address.
Oh, so you can get your mail there.
Oh, yeah. And that's actually, we've discovered that's actually more valuable than we thought it would be, because not having to use your home address or a P.O. box.
Yeah. One thing I noticed, I went to go get food at one point during the day yesterday and left my laptop there. And I was a little like, so I put it in my bag, and then I asked around, is this cool? And they're like, well, normally when it's closed, membership, sure, but when it's open, public, maybe not.
Right.
So I put that off into one of the office of Quiddity's space, because I know the Quiddity's people.
Sure.
And what about lockers? Like, it seems to me like I'd like to be able to store a couple things.
Yeah, there. And actually we have, we're starting to get a lot of requests as our cafe membership starts to boost up. We're getting a lot of requests for lockers, so we're definitely looking into that, and we're looking into a general expansion as well. Mm-hmm.
When you did the research on this, is this happening in other cities?
Absolutely. No, we did not invent this idea. Right. I mean, I think our particular implementation of it is pretty unique. But
it's got a Santa Cruz feel to it.
Yeah, I think so. And sort of the size and scope, I think most co-working spaces, I think, a little bit smaller. And we didn't invent this idea. We did a lot of research on co-working spaces. Most of them are here in California, but they're all over the place. There's a great there's a co-working Google group. There's a co-working Wikipedia post, and there's a lot of them all over the world. So this notion of co-working is definitely not our own.
Carl from Baton Rouge, did that answer your question to some degree?
Basically he was going with Google Calendar, which our group was using too, except for they got rid of the public calendar, so that made it difficult to broadcast general schedules, that type of thing.
Uh-huh. Do you have a collaborative work environment space in Baton Rouge?
Well, I have a number of service centers where we have different companies that come together, and so I'm trying to find a technique to bring them together in their scheduling and their resource sharing, and there's not a lot out there.
Yeah. There's for you know for work environments that for like planning out if you are working as a certain project, there's a thing that the Geekspeak group uses we use for planning shows, and that's called Backpack. Is it no? That's Backpack's the personal one. What's that project's thing called? I'll say it in a minute. I'll link it to the show and everything. But it's kind of the idea is everybody becomes a member and then you can have project goals. And it's from 37 Signals. You can find out about it from there, 37signals.com. But Carl, thanks for the call.
All right, thank you.
Take care. If you'd like to call in with questions and comments about technology, you're welcome to do so. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You know, we did have one more news story that I did like and wanted to talk about. Ben, it was actually yours about small, cheap Linux boxes.
Oh, that one.
Yeah, and Miles, you can actually cover it because you know a lot about it, but either one of you, whatever.
Well, I can start it and then I can pass it to Miles because he knows more than me. But there is a very cheap, like somewhere around $100. It's like a wall wart, like those boxes that you plug into the plug on the wall, the power plug on the wall.
It's like a power brick.
They take up all of that space and everything. We all hate those, but usually all they do is condition the power. This one is actually a Linux computer with 512 megs of RAM and a flash card and 1.2 gigahertz.
Miles,
well,
haven't you been trying
to
buy
to
this
be Linux. It can be any application that fits on that, but it's
comes. Yeah.
It's like it's equivalent to say an ARM9 processor.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 1.2 gigahertz system with 512 megs of RAM, 512 megs of flash space. Gigabit.
With a display adapter so you can run a monitor off of it?
It does not have a video out at all. It's
then what gives a computer without a video out?
Because this is not meant to be someone's personal computer. This is meant to be a home server at some point. So it could be something like a NAS controller or network attached storage. It could be just something that holds your own personal documents as a backup solution. Things like that. Or you could put up a website.
Okay. So it's a server. Would be the purpose of it.
It's the equivalent,
but not
to
a backup
solution. It's the equivalent of a high end server from 10 years ago.
Interesting.
It's about the same power level, the same computing level,
but not the same power level. Actually, it's like
right.
3 watts.
It's a maximum of 5 watts.
5 watts. That's
when
pretty
it's in
nice.
Full usage, it's 5 watts.
And we're gonna see cool things being produced by you, Miles, using this thing.
In sometime in the future, perhaps. They're still working on some things like getting Java working for it Java Virtual Machine and utilities on top of that. From what I've seen, they're still working on getting the various Linux distributions up and running with it. So I'm not going to get here quite on the bleeding edge. Some other brave souls may do so. But I'm also hearing from other people who are in that embedded industry that they're pushing for smaller and smaller and smaller. So this should be an exciting year, actually, for things like this. This is just the first of many, I believe.
Right. I want to mention the application I was talking about was Basecamp. That's what we use. It's come from 37 Signals. It's for collaborative planning, project management, things of that nature. It's really a great product. 37 Signals is a Ruby on Rails development house, and they do a whole bunch of neat applications. They actually, the founder is actually one of the person that kind of invented Ruby on Rails. In any case, Basecamp is a tool that they use to actually build out their products, so it's really interesting. Site, I think it's basecamp.com. But in any case, you can find it from geekspeak.org. And we also had a call of another solution from Ken. And Al, you know about this product?
Yeah, GroupMind Express. Yeah, that's one of those collaborative environments that gets an entire company moving in the same direction. And they're actually based in Santa Cruz. And their application, you know, it lets everybody contribute ideas and sort of, it controls the whole idea, movement of a company. It's actually quite a good application. People might want to check that out. I think it's groupmindexpress.com.
Very cool. Thank you. And we have another call. So should we take another call or should we wrap?
Go for it, man.
I'm tight on time. Let's give it back. I don't even know. Paula, hi. Welcome. What's your question?
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you. I usually don't know much about what you're talking about, but I'm studying at Monterey Institute of International Studies, and we're learning a lot of collaborative technologies.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you were talking about Zoho projects when you were talking about a technology where you can have everyone working on projects and communicating, but they might be, you know, in Australia and Central America at the same time.
I was actually talking about Basecamp, but that sounds interesting, too. What is it called again?
Oh, it's called Zoho Projects. So it's just Zoho.com, and you get one project free, and you invite everyone in, and then you can plan meetings and give each other tasks. So especially if you're like an executive director, you can coordinate with your staff, and everybody can know what everyone's doing. And then the other one we're using is Ning. You can put a lot on there, and that's a free site too.
Well, thanks.
Sure. Just
thanks
some
for
ideas.
Great. Thank you very much for the call.
Okay.
Oh, those great ideas of people coming in. Just,
I know. They're
collaborative.
Yes, it's great.
They're all collaborating.
And we're, of course, running out of time on our collaborative experience of GeekSpeak, so we're going to have to wrap up the show a bit. I want to mention that Jeremy Neuer is the co-founder, again, of Nextspace. You can learn all about Nextspace at nextspace.us, right?
.us.
All right, nextspace.us. Of course, you can go to geekspeak.org and look it up. We've got links all over the place. The geeks today were Miles Elam, Ben Jaffe, and Al Luckow. I'm Lyle Troxell. Anything you wanted to close with real quick?
No, just thanks for having me on, and come see us at Nextspace, 101 Cooper, downtown Santa Cruz.
Great. We have more geek news and information that we put up on the website, geekspeak.org, about the show and about the week in geek news that we don't actually get to cover. So go there for more of that. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Auto, streaming live and podcasting at KOSP.org. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of online tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. For KOSP and for GeekSpeak, my name is Lyle Troxell. Thanks for listening. We'll be here next week.